Okay, well, thanks for the opportunity to be here. I appreciate Jeff and Adrian organizing this session. Slight change to the title, talking about tree growth and soil quality, but we're actually looking for indicators of these factors with forest biomass removal. as much co-authors as acknowledgement, let's see. I'd like to mention the folks that are, I'm working with, Steve Cook and Mark Kimsey are in the faculty at the University of Idaho with myself, Jessica Sauer and Lauren Sherman, graduate students working with me, Alan Talhelm's a postdoc, Marty Jerkinson's contributing to this work, Deb Dumrose and Dan Linder with the U.S. Forest Service contributing as well. Okay, so as with all the other presentations here, we're of course interested in the are there concerns with the impacts of forest operations and utilization on future forest productivity, and trying to understand if these practices that we're engaged in today are going to affect tomorrow's forest productivity. Of course. Questions of sustainability. So it's obviously not possible to measure future forest productivity. So, and you know, most of the studies we're working on are standard 3-year grants, and so we're seeking indicators for detrimental impacts on forests and soil quality. So, just as much as an introduction to some of the work that we're doing, I want to go through a few of the studies that we've that we're working on. Some of them are establishment phase studies, and others are mid-rotation phase studies. So one establishment phase study is very similar to LTSP study, where we have got 20th acre plots. They're replicated on different soil types. The soil types are high-quality basalt parent material and low-quality sedimentary soils. And these include these various sites include biomass retention and removal, and as well as herbicide applications. Mid-rotation were are justified through bioenergy. Funding opportunities where we're looking at thinning studies and removing slash from thinning studies and looking at the impacts of those. One of them is what I call the biochar amendment network, which is basically a set of single tree plots that are located in three different locations. These are early thinning or pre-commercial thinning studies where we're removing or biomass or retaining biomass and applying amendment treatments such as fertilization and char. And a third is a cleverly named BioE study, which is just a it's a bioenergy sustainability standard grant where we have 10th acre plots that are replicated on a couple of locations. They're early, again, pre-commercial thinning studies with the biomass retention and fertilizer amendments. And I'll remind you of these studies as we go through some of the results. And the results, the responses that we're interested in are of course, tree growth, because that's kind of the ultimate measurement that we're interested in is forest productivity. But we're looking also at the physical characteristics of the soil environment, the chemical characteristics of the soil environment, looking at wood decomposition, the diversity of wood decomposers and insects on the site. I'll briefly mention a short insect behavior study that we have, looking at soil respiration as soil CO2 efflux and exoenzyme activities. So for this establishment phase study where we've got 20th acre plots that are replicated on different sites of different soil quality, just a little bit of background, this is a got a point on the right end of the pointer. It's just one of the study sites that has some blocks of biomass manipulation and subplots within it. And here you can see on the high quality sites, there's a little bit higher. This is D squared H seedling volume values from these. There's obviously a difference between the productivity, the site qualities as far as seedling productivity, and there's a little bit of an increase in seedling growth with biomass addition. And these are the no vegetation control plots, and when we add vegetation control, we see quite a dramatic difference, especially on the higher productivity plots where the herbicide is providing for resources that are acquired by the competition. We don't see the same pattern in biomass addition. In fact, it looks like they're actually falling down a little bit, but on the lower quality sites, we're seeing a bit of an enhancement in seedling quality. So growth, seedling growth is an important factor. Here's some results from what I'm calling the biochar amendment network. Replicated. It's a thinning study replicated at three sites. Purdue Creek. This is just an example of that. It's kind of a small area. Each of the colored squares is a different treatment that's applied at each location. Since this is a biochar study, these slides are designed to talk about the biochar, but I think it's pretty effective to tell you a little bit about the biomass retention and removal story as well. So we're interested if char is having an effect, if we can put it on these forest sites without any negative effect. We don't really see a positive effect at Purdue Creek, where we're adding biochar at the high rate of 10 tons per acre. We see an equivalent amount at Swift Creek. We can see an increase at this higher rate with char, so that's an interesting result. Perhaps we can mitigate the effects of biomass removal with this approach. When we fertilize, we've been fertilizing stands in the Northwest for quite a while, and so this is not a surprising result, but we see an increase in growth. But I think the thing that's most interesting is that when we add or when we retain the biomass on the site, all the other treatments had the biomass removed. When we retain the biomass on the site, we can get equal to response to that of fertilization, and even char addition at some locations. Okay, so that's two of the locations. The third location, we don't have a fertilizer treatment, but again, we're seeing an enhancement in growth with the biomass and a mitigation of the removal through the char addition, at least at the low rate, but not at the high rate. So responses are variable; they change depending on the location. Okay, then. So this is our other mid-rotation study. It's the BioE project, where we've got 10th-acre plots at a couple of different locations. This is the plot layout at the Pittwood location. There's a couple of blocks, say 16 plots in each block, and this is a similar design occurs at the experimental forest. You can see there really aren't any within site effects of biomass as we saw in the single tree plot study. So there's about the same rate, maybe a little bit lower productivity at the high addition rate at the Pittwood site, and then a little bit higher productivity, which is not significant, just a trend. But the this experimental forest site is a little bit drier and maybe receiving an advantage from having that biomass on the as a mulch at that location. So speaking of the microenvironment effects, we're also always looking at some of these some of these temperature and moisture factors, and we can see that temperature is decreasing with additions of biomass on these low quality metasedimentary rocks in the seedling regeneration study. So both on the high quality, there's a decrease, and the low quality, there's a decrease. Notice these low quality sites have a little bit higher temperature associated with them. Okay, but so these are microenvironment effects that are associated with biomass addition, and it's not clear whether these are just temporary or long-term impacts. And so, kind of want to understand how these change over time, and is the effect that we're seeing largely due to this microenvironment or some other features of the sites. Such as nutrient availability. So this is some work we've done with resin caps. So just kind of a bad picture of a resin capsule here, but these are put out on low quality and high quality sites at those seedling regeneration study, and with slash loading as the horizontal axis, and nitrate accumulation on the resin caps or phosphate accumulation on the resin caps. And don't really see an important trend with the slash load. I should also say that these are resin caps that have been placed out annually for three successive years and summed over that period of time. We find that there's quite a lot. You can see there's quite a lot of variation, and it's really difficult for us to identify any differences unless we use these resin capsules for quite a long period of time. But there's an important effect of the vegetation control. So with vegetation control, we're seeing that provision of nutrients that's is provided with the herbicide application. And many of these sites are not nitrogen limited, but not phosphorus limited, and so they're isn't a lot of impact due to the herbicide on phosphorus availability. Okay, so we're also looking at wood decomposition, and wood decomposition is a long-term process. It's something we look at for several years, but in the short term, we can also look at the respiration rates from these wood stakes as we remove them from the ground, and so this is what we're looking at here is the respiration of the wood stakes. Not a lot of difference between the biomass retention treatments, but certainly quite a difference between the pitwood site and the experimental forest site. So we can it's kind of an ongoing. Study that we will pursue, and part of this wood stake study includes looking at extracting the DNA from these wood stakes. In the interim, we're also collecting sporocarps from these. So this is a species richness of the sporocarps. This supports the DNA. We can get DNA fingerprints from these sporocarps, understand who's available there, in addition to publicly available databases on the DNA sequences. But again, not strong differences between the treatments that we have out there as far as sporocarp surveys, but we expect that the DNA extraction from the wood stakes will give us a much more complete story of what's happening at these locations. Okay, so we're also looking at the diversity of insects, so not only the diversity of wood rotting fungi, but the diversity of insects that are on the site with these amendment treatments. So this is at the BioE study, the mid-rotation stand where this is the biomass retained treatments that are in the study, and this is the change in number, so the drop in number based on no no organic matter retention, one times organic matter retention and two times organic matter retention, and hopefully you can see that these are all, there's quite a bit of variation. They all have A's next to them. They're not significantly different. We can, however, see that there are some differences with the soil amendment treatments. These, especially the fertilizer treatments, have a decrease in the insect numbers. Just a little bit of a test on that. Here's a survival in a lab arena that's been provided with from 0 to 100 milligrams of the fertilizer that we used on the plots, or from 0 to 100 milligrams of biochar that were applied on the plots. And this is the survival of the ants that were in these arenas over a 48-hour period. So with the char, there with no amendment, there's 70% survival, and that was down to 0% survival after 48 hours. So there, the idea is this char is very fine material, and these insects are being asphyxiated with this. The mechanism for the fertilizer dropping from 36% survival down to 5% survival with the fertilizer isn't quite as clear as the char effect. Okay, so we're also measuring soil respiration at these locations and trying to relate that to microbial activity. We have measured as soil CO2 efflux. So here's the slash treatments at the Pittwood and Environmental Forest study. You can see there's differences between the two locations, but not differences. There's trends for differences between the two locations, but not differences in the slash treatment. Now, when we separate out the seasonal effect, there's quite a strong seasonal effect at the Experimental Forest, which I mentioned is quite a much drier site. So during the fall, these measurements were taken before the fall rains occurred, so the soil moisture was quite dry here. Soil respiration was quite low. At the Pittwood site doesn't have the same dry effect. It's a little higher elevation, and so there's it maintained respiration. So we can see differences in respiration between these locations. And so it gives us some confidence that we, even though there's quite a bit of variability, that we have a way of identifying effects from these biomass manipulation treatments if they do occur. Okay, and so the kind of final measurement that we're looking at is exoenzyme activities, which are giving us an idea of what functional diversity of the microbes are at each of the location. Here's the vertical axis in the left-hand panel are nitrogen-releasing enzymes, so protease and chitinase. Right-hand panel are phosphate-releasing enzymes, so cleaving phosphate ester bonds. The horizontal axis is cellulase. So, and if you look at these lines here, they're parallel and quite different between the Pittwood and the Experimental Forest for nitrogen. Not so different, but both of these lines are significantly different, and they're all parallel. The indication is that the cellulase is releasing carbon or energy. So, for a given amount of energy, there's much more nitrogen released at Pittwood than there is at the Experimental Forest. It's the opposite for phosphate. For a given amount of energy consumed by the microbes, there's a little more phosphatase released. Now, we can look for differences between some of the treatments that we had. One of the most important effects that we saw was a seasonal effect. And so there's always quite high nitrogen and phosphorus release in the summertime the blue lines are the summertime, and so the other seasons are a little bit lower. So again, we have a fairly sensitive test to see that there are differences, and we want to understand if we can see differences between the biomass manipulation treatments. I've just retained these top plant panels for a reference for you from the previous graph. And in this case, we're looking at the biomass retention treatments, and it's not possible to statistically tell differences between these biomass treatments and these nutrient releasing variables. So just go through some conclusions from these kind of preliminary studies or early studies. I'm really jealous of the folks that have 20 years of data. You know, we've got about 2 years at this point. But we can see differences between seedlings and residual tree responses in these to these biomass retention treatments. They may largely be due to environmental variables that we're seeing differences to, moisture and temperature. Impacts on these on microbial activity based on sites and seasons, much more so than biomass removal, and these indicator variables don't seem to detect within differences among biomass retention treatments, although we can see the differences between seasons and locations. So these are short-term impacts, and wonder if they are microclimate effects and how long those will last into the rotation. And of course, we need to understand the longevity of these indicator variables into the future. And hope to find a way to continue to measure these on the site. So I don't know if I have any more time for questions.
I have a question, but thank you.